Anybody from Alaska at that time was, that was federal. And then any person that come from a federal, any government thing that committed a government crime. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people that commit crimes would go to the state. Well, they didn't like state. They didn't like Walla Walla and places like that because they didn't get as treated as good as they did at McNeil Island. So they'd say, don't commit a state crime. Commit right. federal crimes. And then we had people, repeaters, come back mm-hmm. and because they were treated too good. They were fed too good. Mm-hmm. Every person had to have a job, though. And I worked I worked in forestry and also the orchards. We had 200 acres of apple orchards at one time over there, and that was too much, so we cut it down to about 50 acres, but that was apples and plums. We had a great big prune orchard, like 12 acres of prunes and mm-hmm. 50 acres of apples and like that. And the prisoners, I had a crew working out there all the time, in which we would prune the apple trees and, you know, irrigate them and all the stuff, prop and like that. But then when it come time to picking, well, then they'd call out the outside crews and they'd come out and, mm-hmm. and pick apples. And these crews didn't like to come out because they were used to doing like plumbing and electrical like that. And so some of them come out and refused to work. Mm-hmm. This one guy, he refused to work. So I called a lieutenant and he come out, took him, put him in the hole, left him for about a week and went back. She says, you ready to go work? No. So he left him another week. So he finally says, yeah, I'm going back out. So they brought him out and he turned out to be one of the best apple pickers I had. he found out it wasn't all that bad.
That's funny.
We treated our people good, but we were trained to be very strict and don't bring anything into them. That's the first thing they try. One guy, when he asked me, he says, you know, he says, I don't have any money and I sure would like to have some cigarettes. Would you give me a pack of cigarettes? Well, I'd already been warned, don't mm-hmm. do it, because a pack of cigarettes don't seem like much, but then it's two packs and then they get you, and then we'd say once in a while they would get somebody and they'd bring them stuff in. But this was before narcotics. We didn't have narcotics in the prison at that time. It was mm-hmm. kind of a thing, didn't know too much. Now it's every place, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So where were you living at this point? Were you living on the island?
No, we lived over, well, let's see. We lived in a little place in Lakeview, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at Lakeview in a little house. Mm-hmm. And then we started having kids, and we decided we needed more room, so we bought a place down an old military road.
Mm-hmm.
And our daughter still lives there, and it's a real nice house. And we had a friend that was a builder that built on a dining room and built a shop for us and everything down there and did a beautiful job. And, mm-hmm. and so she still lives there. And it's a second. We have our own bedroom there, mm-hmm. so we can go there and stay
whenever you need to.
We've got to keep the place, and mm-hmm. so it's a mutual thing. She doesn't pay rent, which is good, you know, mm-hmm. because but she does so much for us, too. She calls it driving Mr. and Mrs. Daisy, because she takes us every place.
That's
nice. Right now, Jean has a shoulder problem that's real bad, and
we're
going to have an operation.
Operation on it.
You know. And I've got a cataract that's been giving me a bad time, but
mm-hmm.
So anyway, she drives for us now.
Good. So how did you come to the island?
Well, because of my parents lived here, and we decided that, first my brother lived here in this house, and his wife was, I don't know, she had mental problems, mm-hmm. and she smoked an awful lot. And when he moved over here, there was a little cabin over here,
mm-hmm.
but we decided we owned this place here. We split it up, we owned it. So we told him we were going to move over, because he thought he was going to live here the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him how many months to move? Quite a while.
Maybe you don't want all this on the tape.
But anyway, he moved over there and built that house, and, mm-hmm. and we moved in here. But we've done a lot.
That was in December of 1989.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we So that's what we've done since we've been here. We've repainted it.
Because the place had, the property had been split, and this part was ours.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we had this expensive piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to either come here, live here and enjoy it, or sell it, mm-hmm. because it wasn't doing us any good the way it was.
Well,
so.
It was, right.
Do you know Marge Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
Her son, Lowell, which is dead now, mm-hmm. built this first
part. Not her son, her husband.
Her husband, yeah, husband. Bought this, built this first part of the house.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a guy from Stillicum come over and built this part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, huh. I don't know. But since then, why, you know, we've done a few things. Linoleum carpets. And,
mm-hmm. It's a very nice house.
Yeah, it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we got our things that we like that picture over there.
Uh-huh.
That is a very valuable picture. It's done by a artist. He was the work at McNeil Island.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Chicago to learn to be an artist, and he does it all with a palette knife, and your eye mixes the colors. The closer you get, you'll see little spots that there's nothing done with a brush, it's just with a palette knife.
Oh, wow.
And he did that one, and that one, and that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that one over there.
You're using up your tape time.
But anyway. These are things that are treasures that, you know, that I've done, she's done.
Very nice.
Do you want me to start in?
Yeah.
You can fill in wherever I don't remember.
Okay.
Right.
Let's just start with where you were born and go from there.
Okay. I was born in Conrad, Montana,
mm-hmm.
and lived, the closest town was called Agawam.
My mother's side is from Montana, so bigger towns in relation to that?
50 miles north of Great Falls. I mean, yeah, north of Great Falls.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Now I got the general vicinity.
Okay. And it was quite a little town at that time,
mm-hmm.
but the only thing that's there now is a grain elevator and one house.
Oh, but really?
But it used to have a hotel, and the railroad went through because of the pick up the grain from the granaries
mm-hmm.
there. My father was a wheat farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my mother was a native of Washington and just went to Montana with her family as they homesteaded there
mm-hmm.
when the homesteading was open. And she stayed in Montana long enough to have four kids and move back to Washington. So she was actually a Washington native.
Mm-hmm.
My father was from West Virginia, and my sister and I have been back to visit the old place where he was, where he was from. The first thing that probably happened to me in my life after being born was we were in our old Ford, and 4th of July, I was born in April,
mm-hmm.
and the 4th of July, I was in this old Ford, and there was the barnstormers came through with the airplanes,
mm-hmm.
they were doing tricks and everything, and a big 4th of July celebration, and one of them crashed into our car.
Oh, my goodness.
And took the top off from it.
Oh, my goodness. Is everyone okay?
My sister has three holes in the back of her neck where she was hit. My brother was knocked unconscious and taken off to a hospital, and nobody knew where he was for a while, so that was kind of exciting, but I wasn't hurt at all.
Uh-huh.
I was just a baby wrapped up in a blanket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first experience in life, I guess. I went to a little school. We always walked. It was a mile and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Always walked, summer, winter, whatever. And there were seven children in the school, and four of them were from our family.
Wow.
And then there were two brothers and another person. There was one my age. The two of us were in the same grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I describe him as being the only person my age I knew till I was 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
Because we were really country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in when the Depression hit, why, things were not good in farming. And
mm-hmm.
and my uncle lived at Lake Chelan. And he told my dad, he says, well, come, there's always work in the orchards.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved to Manson. And we just lived there 1 year. Then we moved to Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a dairy there. And we were there for about 2.5 years. And this was when the unions were coming in really strong. And we weren't unionized. In fact, it was a family operation. It was, if my dad had help, it would be my uncle or
mm-hmm.
somebody like that. There was nobody outside the family.
Right.
But we delivered milk into Seattle, and my father was afraid that someone was going to get hurt
mm-hmm.
because there was, you know, all the rock throwing and all kinds of things that were going on. And so he didn't want to stay there anymore. So we went to Yakima, and he was a Watkins salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Yakima because
mm-hmm.
you could roller skate.
you could roller skate.
And so then we were there a while, and then we moved to Manson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I graduated from high school from there.
Mm-hmm.
And
so did you meet Earl then when you were in Manson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the second time we were back.
Mm-hmm. When you were back.
Mm-hmm. In fact, our classes, they'd have two grades together.
Mm-hmm.
So we were together 1 year, and then the next year we were still together because they moved it up
mm-hmm.
for the two classes to be together. So we were, for 2 years, we were in the same class when we were in grade school and then mm-hmm. to high school. Our recreation, we in the winter time we would coast and our sleds down all the nice hills and
uh-huh.
and we never had to worry about cars or anything like that because, you know, if there was that much snow on the ground, nobody was going out at night unless they had to, and if they did, they stayed away from the hills that they knew the kids would be on.
Right.
So we had, you know, had good times and swimming in the summer. And then, let's see, we got married in, I graduated in 41, we got married in 42.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took off and left me.
Mm-hmm. So where were you living when he went?
I lived with my parents part of the time, and I lived in Yakima,
mm-hmm.
near my brother part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was down with Ashley for a short time, weren't you?
Well, you know, after I got out of high school, before we were married, I lived in Wenatchee.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, I did live in Wenatchee, too, after we were married. That's right. I worked in the grocery store there.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Wenatchee and went to business college.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we were married, I worked
in
the grocery store in Wenatchee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Went back to Rhode Island to visit him,
mm-hmm.
and that was probably a mistake. I got pregnant. So, first 18 months of our son's life, he didn't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he came back, we lived in Manson for a while, like he told you,
mm-hmm.
and then we moved over in this area. We lived in Steilacoom. Two different places in Steilacoom. We lived in Lincoln Heights, which is up by the Tacoma Mall,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't there.
Right.
And let's see. Then we moved to Lakeview, and then we moved on Old Military Road. Those were the places that we lived.
Mm-hmm.
And but while we were still in Manson, I decided to give birth to triplets.
Oh my.
And two of them lived.
Uh-huh.
And then 13 years later, we had a daughter.
Uh-huh.
So our family was kind of strung out a little bit.
Yep. So what are all your children doing now?
Well, our daughter Jo is a pharmacy technician at Tacoma General.
Mm-hmm.
Our son Jim, he was in the Marines, and then after he was in 6 years, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And after he got out, he went to work for ADT Fire and Burglar Alarm Systems,
mm-hmm.
and worked up in the company in that. And then about 2 years ago, he quit them and went to teaching fire and burglar alarms at Clover Park Technical.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still there and he loves it. He should have always been a teacher.
Yeah.
Always been a teacher, yeah. And our son Wayne, he's been married twice, and with his second wife, he had a leather shop down on the Oregon coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then they retired from that and they live in Boise. And our other son, he's a mechanic, and he just kind of does odd job things, and
mm-hmm.
he does the samples, you know, Safeway, you know, where they giving out samples like that. He does that down
mm-hmm.
at Lacey in that area.
Oh, right.
So
right.
That's
Yeah.
That's what he does an awful lot of his time now, is
mm-hmm.
doing that.
And our son Jim is married to a Hawaiian, and we have the two Hawaiian grandchildren. And Warren's wife is Connie, and Wayne's wife is Joan. And Joe isn't married.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done with my time is raise gardens, can things, and do community work.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl always told me, he says, you don't have to work for wages. There are things that need to be done that you don't get paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of work in PTA, and I was did work with the Scouts, and Church Women United,
mm-hmm.
now Historical Society.
How long have you been with the Historical Society?
Well, let's see, I don't know, how many years?
Many.
Well, we came here in 89, but I didn't start right away. Maybe eight,
mm-hmm.
8 years.
But in those 8 years, done an awful lot of things up there.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of carpentry work and building things, and
mm-hmm.
and she's done so much displaying and.
Yeah, when I first started, I was secretary and I hated it. They can't keep a secretary up there because they. Well, I know how to be a secretary because I've been secretary of a lot of organizations,
mm-hmm.
but they want everything down that they say, and that gets to be
a little tedious.
A little tedious, and there's always well, you didn't put down that I said this, you know.
Right.
So anyway, then they said, okay, they need a membership chairman, and I said, okay, get you a secretary, and I'll be membership chairman.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and then I took. And I was president for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm display and preservation chairman now.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a great job on that too.
It looks great down there. It really does. The second chicken coop is coming along really well. I saw Dennis show me your marine display.
Yeah.
Starting of it.
The one right behind the house there, that building there, we put an awful lot of time in there with all the old tools and everything, and
mm-hmm.
everything that tickets in there. And now we're working in the barn and. And
we're working with Bob Nelson in the barn.
We've got about half of that, two-thirds of it done down there. That's
mm-hmm.
going to be a great display place, too.
Yeah, I was down in the barn last spring.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a lot since then.
It's been a lot since then?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what else to tell you.
Well,
what else do you want to know?
Let's go back to the bus trip that you were going to tell me about.
Oh, okay. The bus trip to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Well, Earl's mother, she thought that she ought to go back and see her two sons because they were together during the whole thing. In fact, one of them had the upper bunk and one of them had the lower bunk through all through the war.
Is that normal for them to keep
No,
together like
we
that?
Had to have permission. Okay. When the Sullivan brothers, you know, were killed, that was five of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they says no more brothers, but with your parents' signature, you could. We had to have that, and they let us go together.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a gal that was sweet on Larry, and so the parents didn't want them her to know that we were going. Isn't that terrible?
Yes.
But anyway, we went. And of course, this was wartime, and the buses were using worn-out tires and everything else, and so every once in a while you find yourself stranded out on the prairies of Montana or someplace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, we made it back there and visited with them, and then she went on, started back because she wanted to stop in Illinois to visit relatives. And I stayed a month back there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really interesting because I just didn't know a stranger. You know, everybody was, I thought everybody was, you're supposed to talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I did keep a journal, and it was kind of interesting to the people that I got to talk to. And then coming back, the rivers were all flooded, and the bridges were out.
Mm-hmm.
So they put us on a train, and we came across, must have been the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
on a train. And that was really scary because all you could see was water. I mean, mm-hmm. here you were out there in the middle of all this water going across.
Right.
But I guess the engineer could see the tracks. Well, then I got back to near Wenatchee, and of course I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden I needed to vomit.
Mm-hmm.
So I rang the thing for the bus to stop, and he pulled over and stopped. Well, I just left everything, my purse and everything there, and I got out. So I didn't think, this was before the days that they had a restroom on a bus, you know.
Right.
And so I got out and did what I had to do, and the bus pulled off and left me there.
Oh, no!
So somebody that was sitting near me said, I don't think she intended to stay.
Uh-huh.
So she's left all of her stuff. I don't think she intended to stay. So they turned around and they came back and got me.
I bet for that few moments before I turned around and came up and got you, I bet your heart was kind of in your throat.
Yeah. Out there in the middle of nowhere, you know, yeah.
Wenatchee area is definitely out in the middle of nowhere. That's funny. So when did you find out that you were pregnant? Had you already left?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In those days, they didn't know whether you're going to have one or two or three. They didn't have any idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was sick from the day I got pregnant until they were born at 6.5 months.
Oof. Mm-hmm. Not fun.
One of them weighed 314, one of them weighed 310.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, I guess, was never weighed, so. Let's see, what did I tell you about? I had, in my family, there were four of us, two boys and two girls.
Mm-hmm.
And my older brother, when he was, he worked at Boeing, and when he was 27, he got aluminum dust in his lungs, and it just cut his lungs all to pieces.
And how did he get aluminum dust in his lungs?
They just didn't use the protection.
No drilling like that. They didn't wear masks or anything.
Right.
Yeah. This day and age, they'd be sued.
Right.
But they didn't. And anyway, he died from that.
Did it take a long time for him to die, or did he just...
Yeah, it was probably, well, a year and a half, something like that, that he was in the hospital.
That would be awful. Yuck.
Yeah, he was in Spokane. It was a tuberculosis hospital because they didn't know what else to do with him,
right.
You know, with the lung problem. So
right.
That was where he died.
Huh.
And then my other brother had a very interesting life. When he was little, he was following my dad along as he was plowing the fields, and he got in the way and broke his leg.
Oh. Ow.
And then it didn't heal right, and so he went to, they took him to Mayo Brothers, which is in New York, the famous clinic there. And he went back the first time, and they reset it, but it still wasn't right. So the second time he went back, my mother went with him, and they took a bone out of my mother's leg and grafted it into his. Which was really something, you know.
Right.
This was a long time ago,
right.
You know.
Wow.
And because he would have been 85 now.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What time, or how old was he at the time of the accident?
Let's see. He would have been about 4.
Oh, so really young.
Yeah, real young.
Wow.
And then he, after he went back the first time to Mayo Brothers, then he fell and broke it again. And that's when my mother went back with him. And I can remember. People tell me I couldn't possibly remember because I was 2 years old.
You have memories of,
yeah,
too. Some people are.
I can remember when he fell.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my aunt going to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just as plain as if it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
So anyway, he always was crippled and always had a short leg, and then he died of a heart attack when he was about 60.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister is 83. And she is a going concern.
She can live to be 100.
She's disgustingly healthy.
Darn stubborn too, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's where we go an awful lot.
Go visit her often?
Yeah, many, many times. She comes here once in a while.
My dad was German descent.
Mm-hmm.
Very... Well, what would you say? Stern?
Mm-hmm. Very stern.
Very stern.
Mm-hmm.
Life was kind of hard to live with him, but you kind of had to understand how he grew up. And as I told my brother and my sister, I said, you can't hold these grudges because you've got to understand what his life was like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first place, reserve German. I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops, I hit the thing. But when his family, his father had a child out of wedlock, as they said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my father's grandfather took the child to raise it then as their own. And then he married my grandmother, mm-hmm. and there were three children, my Uncle Howard, Aunt Ethel, and my dad, mm-hmm. Herbert. And then she died. Mm-hmm. So he married again, and he had a whole bunch of children, I think. I don't remember how many, 5 or 7, something like that.
Goodness, that was a full house then.
So, but my dad went to live with an aunt, mm-hmm. and uncle, and then for some reason they couldn't keep him. Nobody explained anything to children, you know. Mm-hmm. So he was just shoved around, and everybody he loved, he lost, you know. Well, then, anyway, his father died, mm-hmm. and his second wife married again and had some more children. Mm-hmm. So there's, I mean, about 5 families. Some of them are related to each other, mm-hmm. here in the middle. These are not related to those, but they're still.
Right.
So that was really a funny family.
All through there, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, I think because, you know, he was not explained to when he was a child why he was treated like he was, and he was just kind of shoved from here to there, and mm-hmm. I think that added to, but he was very tight mm-hmm. with money.
Mm-hmm. How was he with you as far as being his child and discipline and things like that?
Well, I never had any problem with him because I stood up to him.
Yeah?
That's what he wanted, really, wasn't it?
I think so. Mm-hmm. The other kids didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and it finally, well, and he and my mother fought a lot. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, this trip that my sister and I took explained a lot of things. We went to West Virginia and found out that they were the revolutionists during the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the first battles one of my relatives fought in. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Canada to visit my mother's people, and they were the Tories, or the Loyalists, to England. Uh-huh. And so I said, the Revolutionary War keeps on fighting.
Your family.
But as they got older, my mother began to say, well, you know, some of the problems were hers, mm-hmm. And so they got along better. Well, I say this, but my sister says you just didn't work close enough to him. But anyway, yeah. But there was always this conflict in my family. I grew up with conflict. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was just the opposite.
Yeah.
Just everybody got along so good and mm-hmm. no conflict at all.
Understandable. So do you have any significant memories of other members of your family or anything, some of your siblings and stuff? I mean, you mentioned your brother and everything, but you have anything else that...
Growing up, I was never close to my brothers or sister. There was enough age difference. Yeah. Now, my sister and I we would be together a lot because of... She would be with an older person in the family, and I'd be with a younger person in the family, so we might be in the same house, you know, we'd go visit friends, and uh-huh. and so we would be together somewhat, but we were never close until we grew up. I just sort of went my own way. I was too much my father's daughter, I guess. Uh-huh. I always loved to walk.
Yeah.
And my mother would say, in the afternoon, she'd say, well, I wonder who Jean is walking home today, because I would walk all the kids home from school before I'd go home.
Before you go home.
She never, and those were days that you didn't have to worry about. And when we lived at Kent, we had big woods, and we had a horse, and I would go out and ride the horse, or I'd go down in the woods and play or something, and never... Nobody ever worried about me, mm-hmm. you know. And I wouldn't let one of my kids do that without knowing where they were. And then now, you know, all these years later. And I feel that it's too bad that children don't have the freedom that they used to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I grew up, I don't think there was a moment in my entire life up until I was about 18 that my mother didn't know where I was. And if she didn't, I was in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was there like some kind of unwritten rule that you check in by a certain time, or they just...
No, they just knew I'd come home.
No, we went to Wenatchee to something down
Apple
there.
Apple Blossom Festival.
Apple Blossom Festival, and we went down with some person, I think, come back with another, and then he had a flat tire on the way, and in those days you didn't have a spare. A lot of times you'd have to get out and patch them, and we'd patch them, and finally we came home on the rim. We come about halfway from Wenatchee up to Manson on the rim of the car and got at her place, and the sun was shining when we got there. And she just went, I don't think your folks probably even asked you where you were they? Or, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. They just didn't seem to worry about us.
Same with me. My parents didn't, they trusted us. And well, I don't know why that when we were kids, you were expected to do the right things. I never was spanked in my life. And my dad, if he'd just look at you, boy, oh man, he didn't want him to do that. And Mom, she just, maybe, I remember the first time that when we were just kids, why my older brother had some cigarettes, and he was smoking. So we all was sitting in the kitchen smoking cigarettes because our folks were going to Wenatchee, and they forgot something, and they come back, and they open the door, and there the smoke come rolling out. Bob, she started crying, and Dad, he come in and just took one look at us. We never smoked cigarettes. We got rid of them, and we never smoked again for a long time.
That's funny.
Yeah.
As far as discipline goes in your family, were you ever spanked or anything like that?
No.
We just kind of...
We were expected to do good, and we did...
Did the best you could to be good, huh?
I don't remember doing things that
With our kids... You know, you hear people say, just wait till your father comes home. I always figured that if they did something wrong, they should be disciplined immediately, and it should be forgotten about, because I didn't want to think about it all day.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we never had time out. We never had... restriction or anything like that, because
they were awfully good kids too.
They were awfully good kids. They were awfully good kids. And Joe says I have that look that you talk about with your father. And
my mom has that look too.
And they never made a fuss in public. They knew better. But I don't know what I would have done, but they just knew better.
They shouldn't. Funny. Yeah, I think my mom kind of had the same kind of plan there too. I don't know if she would have done anything to me if I said something that I shouldn't have or done something I shouldn't have in public, but
I told Joe, our daughter, one time, I said, if you want to make a fuss, you just try it and see what I do. I said, you'd be so embarrassed.
I think my mom kind of likes to use that embarrassment thing too. So, as far as your work goes for nonprofit organizations and stuff, you mentioned that you've worked as a secretary and stuff before you came to the Historical Society. Where were you doing that, and what for? Besides just the PTA?
Mostly the PTA and Church Women United.
Organization, she got into a deal where selling things for, tell them about that.
Well, it's a program that's called SERV, S-E-R-R-V, Sales Exchange for Refugee Rehabilitation Vocations. I remembered it.
That is kind of
helpful. It's through Church Women United and Church World Service, and they buy these things from all over the world, even in some in this country too. And it's home, where they make them, you know, in their homes or small factories or mm-hmm. something. And it's a market for them mm-hmm. so that they can be self-supporting.
Self-supporting, right.
She did this for years, and there's no pay on that. She used to order things. She'd get catalogs and order them and get big.
Oh, it was just like Christmas all the time. Yeah. I'd have things delivered, yeah. you know. And, mm-hmm. and I, like you said, I could do the ordering. And then I would go to different churches and take them, when, especially if they were having like a bazaar or mm-hmm. something like that. And so I had about 10 or 12 churches that I went to mm-hmm. in the area. Fox Island was always fun, and
University Church.
University Place Church, and
got to meet a lot of people that way. We used to know all
yeah. good church. But since people. It is an interdenominational group, see, it's all the main line Protestant churches, the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. So it was great, and felt that we were doing something really. Really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was wood carvings and pottery and baskets and everything
all
that you can think of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, weavings and. Hmm. And
so they were just from all different kinds of countries, and
mm-hmm.
people would just make them and send them, or you would order them from them, or directly, or.
No, there's a central place in Maryland that uh-huh. they would, everything would be shipped there.
And you'd order from there.
Mm-hmm.
Finally got to be so much, and we had so many other things to do that she finally gave it up and turned it over to somebody else, and that's about the end of it, isn't it?
No, oh, they do it once in a while.
They do it once in a while, but nothing like
nothing
she did.
Like you
mm-hmm. Yeah, because I would probably go to each one of the churches twice a year
mm-hmm.
for some whenever they had something going on.
Right, some kind of church bazaar or
mm-hmm.
craft sale.
So,
wow, that's really neat. So, when you were in the PTA, was this just PTA for your own children?
Mm-hmm.
She was even president, weren't you?
Yeah, I held all the offices.
Mm-hmm.
Every office there was, except budget. I didn't want that. and same way in Church Women United, I was mm-hmm. held all their offices, was president. And
so now we're getting to the
quite
place
a few years.
That we're starting to give up things, like over at Stillicum, where we're both docents over there, and we just finally just gave that up
mm-hmm.
and called them and told them, and they understood. And but we've been back over and just stop in and say hi to them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
they're such nice people over at the Indian Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got lots and lots of memories there. In fact, that church that is a Stilton, we went to church there
mm-hmm.
years ago before they built the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We knew the minister there, and then the Dossett was the one that was the first minister at the other church, and he's got a daughter, Zoanne, that, we saw her, I saw her, they had all Stilicum yard sale, and
mm-hmm.
she was up there at the church,
mm-hmm.
and I got to go up and talk to her.
That's nice.
Hadn't seen her for, you know, many, many years, but
mm-hmm.
she remembered me.
I'm going to flip this or get a new tape here real quick.